Welcome to the weekly podcast from the Mattoon Public Library. I'm Carl Walworth, the library director, and each week we have a conversation to support our vision of sparking ideas, enriching lives, and strengthening community. And this week we're going to have a conversation with Randy Irvin. Randy is the police chief at Lakeland College, and he's also a published author, four times, I believe, four books, and so it's an interesting mix, and Randy, good to have you.
Well, thank you, Carl. I appreciate the invite. I don't know that 5 years from now that listeners will look back and say that this is their all-time favorite podcast, but I think it'll be fun. I look forward to it.
Yeah, good. Let's just start, and as we were talking a little bit before we started taping, law enforcement professional and published author are, I'm sure you're not the only one, but I think it's probably a small number of people that have both of those items in their background. How did that come about?
Well, you may be right about that. Interestingly, one of my favorite authors years ago was a man named Joseph Wambaugh, who was retired Los Angeles Police Department and went on to have a very successful writing career. He wrote The Onion Field. It was one of his more famous ones that was adapted into a movie, but he wrote a number of novels that I enjoyed, and I always thought that was kind of a neat mixture because I grew up being someone who loved to read, and I always had a passion for writing. I've always enjoyed it, and law enforcement was always the career that I knew that I wanted to go into. So somebody like Mr. Wambaugh, who had kind of done both, I thought that was intriguing. Read all of his novels and enjoyed them, so I don't know if there's any tie there, but yeah, I've been a cop for 30 years and been very much an amateur writer now for a few.
And so writing often goes with reading, so does that mean you were a good reader through the years?
I don't know if I would say that I was a good reader through the years, but reading is something that I have always enjoyed from the time I was little. I read books and through high school and college. I've just always enjoyed reading. And I don't know if writing kind of spawned from that or if it was just kind of a passion that was always there as well. But I always enjoyed writing and always told myself, well, someday I'm going to write a novel.
And you did.
And I did.
Yeah. So one thing about your background is the law enforcement and the writing, and another is, of your four books, two are fiction and two are nonfiction. And oftentimes, not always, you know, we think of somebody as a fiction writer or a nonfiction writer. Was that by design, or how did that come about?
Well, I don't think it was by design. That probably mirrors my reading habits. Some people, I think, tend to gravitate to a particular genre or a particular style of writer, and I've never been that kind of reader. I've always been a reader who enjoys fiction and nonfiction and history and literature and just a little bit of everything. So maybe that mirrors that. The book that I always told myself was the one that I wanted to write, and always thought if I did actually write a book would be my first one, ended up being actually my second one, was the novel, or it's not a novel, it's a true story about Leighton Davis, a state trooper who was murdered near Effingham back in the 70s. And I had heard the story, I knew some of his family, and was intrigued by that incident. And I always kind of told myself, I'm going to write a book someday, and when I do, that's going to be the story. Well, my first book ended up being a book called Maycroft from 232nd. It's a work of fiction. It's a mystery geared toward probably middle school age kids. And it has a lot of local Mattoon history intertwined into the plot, which I thought was fun. Mm-hmm. When I wrote that book, my two daughters, Katie and Rachel, were roughly that age. So I kind of wrote it for them. They enjoyed mysteries. I enjoy mysteries. I enjoyed writing. So I had kind of come up with this idea in my head for a plot that I thought they would enjoy, and then wrote the novel around it. So the Leighton Davis book kind of got put on hold while I did that, and that was my first attempt at actually writing a book and trying to learn the process.
And that was in what year?
Oh, you know, I could have told you if you hadn't asked. It's probably been about 10 or 12 years ago.
Mm-hmm. And so, staying with kind of that fiction, nonfiction theme, or does that allow you to experiment with different styles and different approaches? Or how do you, well, I guess there has to be, there is a difference in how you approach a fiction, kind of developing a plot line?
There is absolutely a difference in how you approach writing fiction versus nonfiction. And I think they both kind of have their pros and cons as far as if you would ask, for example, which is easier. I don't know that I could answer that, because they both have things that to me make it a little bit easier to write the story, and things that are more difficult. For example, a work of nonfiction like the book about Trooper Davis, to some extent, the work behind that is doing the research. It's mm-hmm. going to the courthouse and getting police reports. It's going to the newspaper and getting archived stories. It's learning who was involved in that incident, trying to track them down. Are they still alive? If so, where are they? And interviewing them and so on. But once you have done that, then it's a matter of putting pen to paper or finger to keyboard, I suppose, and telling the story. But the story is what it is. You're not making up a character, or you're not making up a part of the plot. You're simply retelling what you have learned happened. Mm-hmm. So in some ways that's easier, whereas a work of fiction is a little more difficult, because you have to develop a character, you have to develop a storyline. If you have maybe written a few chapters and you're trying to figure out how you're going to bridge one part of the story to the other, there's no research you can do that's going to tell you what the answer to that is. You have to come up with it. So that's a little more difficult. But on the flip side, it's more fun, because you can write that nasty character or that weird character or, you know, whoever, and you can make it be whatever you want it to be.
So you can take your life experiences or those of people you observe or family, such as your daughters, and use that as ways to develop themes that you think will be of interest and put them into a narrative arc. Is that how you go about it?
I think so, and there's kind of a common cliche among writers, is that you write what you know. And it's interesting when you listen to even the most accomplished authors, whether you're talking about a John Grisham or a James Patterson or whoever it is, they will tell you that they write what they know, that a lot of the things that appear in their novels are characters may be based loosely on people that they actually know, or events or locations that they're familiar with. And so I think that's easy to do, but it can also kind of make an interesting part of the story. And one example is that of that would be with my second novel, a work of fiction called What Goes Around, that it involves the murder of an undercover police officer, and the murder kind of goes unsolved. And so his partner becomes frustrated and starts looking into things on his own. And then when he does, he realizes that there are some powerful people that have a vested interest in making sure that the murder goes unsolved. And so as he digs deeper, now he's in danger, and so on and so on. Well, the undercover officer who is murdered at the beginning of the book goes to what he believes is a drug buy. He's a narcotics investigator, and he has a drug buy set up, and he goes, well, it's an ambush, and he doesn't have any backup. He couldn't get a hold of anybody, so the policy is that you can't go unless you have backup. Somebody's got to know that you're going, but he makes the snap decision that he's going to go anyway, and then he's ambushed. Well, I probably shouldn't be telling this story, because I'm telling on myself a little bit, but that's kind of based on something that happened to me years ago when I worked at the Sheriff's Department. I spent 3 years in the Drug Task Force and did exactly that. I was young and foolish and made a very poor mistake in that I had a buy lined up, but it was literally a now or never situation, and I couldn't get a hold of anybody. So I went, and it went off without a hitch. The problem was that the next morning I had to go into work and tell my boss, a retired state police master sergeant named Charlie McGrew, who was the director of the task force at the time, what I had done. And Charlie proceeded to give me probably the worst tongue lashing that I have ever received in my professional career, and I deserved every word of it. But years later, 20 years later, I'm writing this novel, and I incorporated not only that, but other experiences I had had when I was in the drug task force into some of the characters that I developed for that novel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good lesson and good story. And then you mentioned three of your books, and not the last one, I assume there's some more in the pipeline, and we can talk about that in a minute. But the fourth one, Famous Cops You've Never Heard Of. How did that come about?
That was kind of an interesting one. Basically, what that book is it's a collection of true stories. Each story in the book is maybe anywhere from 3 to 5 pages, very short snippets. But they are just that. They're stories about police officers who weren't famous, weren't notorious. You would have never heard of them. Most people still to this day have never heard of them. But if you type their name into Google, you'd get many hits because of something they did. And generally, these are stories about cops who, on one day of an otherwise uneventful career, did something that literally threw them into the path of history. The idea for that book originally came from was one of the stories that I tell in the book about a patrolman with the New York City Police Department, a guy named Michael Cataneo. The interesting thing that he did, it doesn't sound interesting when you tell the story, but he's working a midnight shift one night, and he's walking his beat, and he sees an unattended parked car sitting next to a fire hydrant. So he writes out a ticket, he puts a copy under the windshield, and he goes about his business. What could be more mundane than that? Well, that act ended up being the break that detectives needed that ultimately led to the identification and arrest of David Berkowitz, the serial killer known as the Son of Sam. There had been a woman who had reported a suspicious individual in the area the night prior to when there had been a shooting. And based on that report from this citizen, the detectives thought, did the shooter get to the area? Did he walk there? Did he drive? So kind of on a lark, they decided to go back and pull the traffic tickets from that night, and they discovered this one. And it was a car that matched the description that the witness had reported seeing. And they did some follow-up on it, and it ended up being Berkowitz. So I remember reading that story years ago, and I just thought, well, this is fascinating. Here's a guy who, had it not been for the fact that he wrote a parking ticket, he would have retired, faded into obscurity. Nobody would have ever heard of this guy. But now if you type his name into Google, it's going to come up. There's articles about him. He's the guy that was the break that they needed to arrest a serial killer. So that got me thinking, well, how many other similar stories might be out there of cops who have done things like that? And there are a lot of examples. A guy named Charlie Hanger, Oklahoma state trooper who pulled over Timothy McVeigh not long after the Oklahoma City bombing, took him into custody on unrelated charges, had no idea who he had just arrested, and you can go on and on. So anyway, that's kind of the premise of the book and a little bit of the idea. But what I started doing then was just over time, anytime if I would hear a story like that, come across a story like that, I had a notebook, I would make some notes, I would get on the internet, I'd print off some articles and put them in a file. And I kind of thought, well, someday I'm going to have enough that I can make a book out of it.
Yeah, that's interesting. We just had a conversation in here yesterday about, and oh, I don't know if 3 to 5 pages you consider a short story, but on how, you know, good books of short stories have some good appeal to them, and you get a good, it has a theme about officers and law enforcement and interesting stories, but you get a good mixture of things that happen. And so that's very interesting, and maybe that's what you had in mind as you were short stories. I don't know when you put that together, but good. Let's talk a few minutes, Randy, about anybody that's written anything with a good-sized narrative arc knows that those things require more than just a person's whose name's on the front to be involved. About the process you go about in developing, and we've talked a little bit about how you develop the idea and some of the research and the plot, but what else goes into that, and what else does it take to make these work as far as having things published?
Well, you're exactly right that there's a lot of people that really help you behind the scenes, so to speak, to get your finished product to where you want it to be. Through the course of writing the books, I've learned things. I made some mistakes with my very first one, the kind of rookie mistakes that in hindsight I wish I would have done differently, like hiring a professional editor and things like that. But usually the first thing I will do is when I'm finished with the rough draft of a manuscript, I'll make a number of copies of that. And there are various people that I will give the manuscript to that I will then ask for them, get out your red pen, mark it up, and give me feedback. And I want honest, constructive criticism. And I pick different people for different reasons. For example, I have a friend, Tom Caldwell, at Lakeland. He teaches English and composition. So he's the guy who I asked to, mark it up for composition errors. You used a colon here and it should have been a semicolon and those kind of things. So he kind of does his work with that. I've got a handful of people who I know are voracious readers, and that they, if they like fiction, then when I write a work of fiction, I'm going to have them read the manuscript. Now, what I'm looking for from them is I don't care so much about grammar and punctuation, whatever. I want feedback on the story. Did you like it? Did you find it interesting? Was it boring? Were the characters not interesting? If they weren't, how can I spice it up and make it better and so on? So there are a number of people who have done that. My wife and my two daughters, will read over my manuscript and give me feedback. A lady who used to work at the library at Lakeland College, her name's Judy Kinesco. She loves works of fiction, and she'll read through and give me feedback on, I think you could make this character a little more interesting if you added this, or this part of the plot would transition better to the next segment if you did that. And so I gather all that kind of feedback, and then based on that, I'll make corrections, I'll tweak characters, I'll rewrite the manuscript. And then when I get that done, and I feel like I'm ready to have a professional look at it, then I do just that. I have a professional editor and proofreader, a lady named Beth Hauser. She lives up north of Champaign near the Paxton area. And a lot of people would know her sister, Rita Ryder, who lives here in Mattoon. And I got to know Beth years ago through her. And she is just absolutely phenomenal. She gives great feedback. She really is a true professional in knowing editing and composition and grammar and all those kinds of things. And she gives me that kind of feedback, but she also catches things like inconsistencies in the plot. Well, do you realize that you said here it was, it was 100 degrees, but then later you're talking about it being October. That doesn't fit, those kind of things. And so I give it to her, and she does a professional editing, and then I will rewrite the manuscript based on her feedback, give it back to her one last time. Is there any maybe thing that you missed the first go around, or feedback that you gave me that I missed? Once that's all done, then I'm ready to go to press. But yeah, the bottom line, I've kind of made a short story long there, but there are so many people who help you along the way and give advice. And without it, quite honestly, you could never pull it off.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So, and then your books are all self-published?
They are. Mm-hmm. Years ago, I went to a class offered through Lakeland. It was a community program on how to self-publish a book, and I had started my manuscript of Maycroft, and felt like I was getting to the point where before too long, I'm going to be ready to get serious about this, but I had no idea how to do it. And so I took this class and I learned some things, but they have all been self-published. The big key really is finding a printer, and you have to have someone who can help you design the cover and do the cover layout. And so I have a graphic artist, Paula Rosine at Lakeland College, who does this on the side, who has helped me with that. So just another example of how you have to seek out people that have expertise that you do not to help you put it together. But it's really exciting when you get that final product back and it's the bound edition, and your box of 50 or 100 or however many that you've bought, and you open that box and you pull it out, and it's a great feeling.
It is, yeah. More in the works, or do you want to go down that road?
Yeah, I've got a couple that I'm working on. I have one work of fiction that I'm working on now, and kind of the basic premise of that one is that there's a guy, don't want to give away too much of kind of his character, but he's really not a bad guy, but he's gotten himself to a very dark place because of some things that have happened in his personal life. But the long and short of it is that this guy has kind of set about being a vigilante, and he tracks down child molesters and kills them because he's of the mindset that, well, if you don't, you know, these guys get off on technicalities and this and that, and as long as they're breathing, they pose a danger to children, and we can't have that. Kind of the interesting thing about it, though, is that he really wrestles with it. He's a very moral person, and he knows that it's wrong, and that try as he may, that he cannot morally justify what he's doing, but he's almost like an addict who has gotten to a point that he can't stop. So,
good. Randy, it's been a pleasure to have you this morning. I appreciate you coming by. Appreciate all your hard work. Congratulations on being a four-time author. I would just say, from the Mattoon Public Library perspective, we encourage and want to support local writers and authors in any way we can. So if you have something that you would like us to do to help us along that way, we are more than open to that. I also would mention that all four of Randy's books are in our library, as well as some other libraries in the area, Lakeland's and some of the schools and some of the neighboring libraries. So we hope you'll come and check them out. Randy, thanks again for being here, and we hope you all will join us again next week for the podcast from the Mattoon Public Library.